Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to episode 123 of Game Store Profits, the podcast where a handful of guys get together to talk about God and the games that we love and how these things come together. My name is Mike Perna, and we are down a man, but I am still here with the awe-inspiring Daniel Fisher.
Hello, hello everyone. How are you all tonight?
Now, Daniel, we kind of ended last episode getting everybody all hyped for the fact that you were about ready to have a game day, the first ever. What are you calling it now? Inroads East Tennessee?
That's probably the best way to put it. Inroads East Tennessee Group. You know, I couldn't come up with anything any better. I'm not that creative of a person. But
it works. It gets the job done.
Yeah. So hopefully we'll have a Inroads Middle Tennessee sometime. Until then, I can drive out there.
We'll have one in every state before long. So before we get into anything else about what we've been playing, everything like that, tell us about this game day. Because from all the pictures and everything that you put up in the tavern, man, it seems like you guys had a blast.
Dude, it was so awesome. Let's see here. Before it even started, I was nervous. I was like, "Oh no, what if we have too many people, or what if we don't have enough people?" And that's the things I was worrying about. I was like, "What if nobody can figure out how to play their games because they all get nervous like I am right now?" And you know, and like a few days before that, I had come down with an upper respiratory infection. And then I got a stomach bug the night before, and it was just like the devil was attacking me from all sides, you know, saying, "Haha, you're going to be sick while this is going on." And it was just frustrating.
I remember, man. I remember seeing you post up something on Facebook and just being like, "Just pray. Just pray that I can stand, let alone teach games."
Oh, but when we finally got there, you know, we were down one teacher, and that was because he was sick, too. He had bronchitis. And he was the guy that was going to, you know, run zombies. And, you know, because it was one of the games he knows how to play. And so I was going to have him teach people how to play zombies. But when we got up there, that's actually the first game I broke out with zombies, because it's one of my favorite games. And I wanted to introduce the trainers to the game. So I sat down with each one of them and, you know, in the group, and we decided to do a cooperative play. And as I was teaching them, instead of them, you know, moving the zombies on their turn, I got to be the zombies, which is a better way for me to play that. Because, I mean, I think that one person that's not playing a character needs to play the zombies. And it's just, you know, if not, people are going to have the zombies go away from them while they're trying to get to the end. So, but it was pretty cool. Yeah, that game was, it's always a good game to open up on, because it's such a simple game, but it can get really intense really fast, and it's just a great way to open up any game day.
Yeah, it is fun just to see it. How about give the people just a broad strokes? We've mentioned it before, but just a broad strokes of what Zombies is about, if the title doesn't, you know, we can't verbally, you know, talk about just how many exclamation points they put on the end of this the title for this one.
Well, it's a game about trading and getting resources and building towns. Just kidding.
It's a civilization builder.
Pretty much, the board game is a deck of cards. You know, the like 4-inch by 4-inch cards, you shuffle them. The key for the base expansion is you start at the beginning, and every player turn, they draw a card and it adds to the map. And then from where it adds, some cards actually put zombies, health, and ammunition into play as well. And so, like, the key for the basic expansion, or the basic game, is to get to the helipad, clear it of all the zombies, and then as long as everybody gets there alive, you win the game. The cool part about it is, where you have to shuffle it up, the board changes every time you play it. And so it's a completely different game every time you play it. So, and it's just a great little game. And it's pretty cheap, too. It's under $30. And I think they're up to, like, 20 expansions for this game.
I don't know what the number is on it, but there are an absolute ton of them, because when you really break it down, all it is adding new cards and adding a handful more zombie miniatures.
Yeah. And you can, if you ever think you're going to run out of zombie miniatures, you can buy the miniatures in the packs of like 100 for $10. So if you need zombie miniatures for Dungeons and Dragons, that's the way to go.
Or if you just randomly just have a thing that you need zombies in your life.
Yeah. Or they have zombie clowns. I think they have zombie cheerleaders as well.
Of course there are zombie clowns. Why would there not be zombie clowns?
But after that, my man Carlton taught the other people in the group how to play Castle Panic. And we had a win on that one on the first time with it. You know, I've played it before, of course, and we had two new people. But it was a hard win, but we actually got to the end with a pretty good win.
Castle Panic is one of those games that I often find myself starting out going, no, things are good. This is great. We're going to do all right here. And then just everything just falls down around you.
Yeah, as soon as those walls start coming down and you start drawing bad cards, you know, it's just it. We literally won that game with one piece of the tower still standing.
Yep, that's how it happens a lot of the time.
Yeah, if we had went one more turn though without winning, then we would have actually lost. So it was a pretty intense win there. And Carlton was very excited with the fact that he was able to teach it very well and get it across to the two new guys without me helping. So, because it was his first time ever trying to teach the game. I just introduced him to that game probably about a month ago.
That's a pretty good turnaround from, you know, having never played the game to teaching it.
Yeah.
So usually when I talk to people about some kind of event like this, because we could literally spend the whole episode just talking about what happened there, I'm sure. But usually how I break it down for people is I ask one question. I say, if you can only tell one story about this event, what would it be?
Well, so we were actually starting to play a game of Pandemic. And, you know, in the people that were there was me and the trainers and one of the kids that lives at the facility that we were doing this at came down, and we, you know, kind of made him play. It's like, sit down, you're playing this game. And you know, we had probably about 2 hours left, and lo and behold, four more people showed up. And so I pulled away from the group, and I set these guys down. I knew them. They're from my small group. And, you know, they're like, oh, yeah, we remembered you're having your game day today. And so they came over, so I introduced them to the best game in the world, Zombies. And, you know, we're playing that, and all of a sudden we hear a yell. Yeah! Everybody's up pumping their fist. And it was the first time I've seen in the flesh a win in Pandemic. And they were just so excited, I had to stop Zombies for a minute and take pictures, because that's a pretty hard game to beat.
Yeah. I've often said that I've played Pandemic more times than I can count, because it's been around for so long. I can, however, count the number of times I've won on two hands.
Yeah. It's an intense game, especially when you get down towards the end of it. And, you know, you had three people that have never played it before, and one guy teaching it that has played it before. And for them being their first time playing and to beat it was just like, wow, you either did something good or you weren't playing by the rules at all.
I don't know, were you watching that one? Because one thing I'm always curious, especially when you have people that have never played it before, that game is infamous for alpha player problem, where one guy is just making all the moves and everyone else is just going okay.
No, I was overhearing some of the conversation. They were actually working really well together. The person that I have teaching that game, his name's Andrew Slim. He's in the tavern, and he's one of my best friends. And I'll tell you a little bit about him outside. He's actually a counselor. You know, he deals with children with autism and things. So he's always getting people and pushing them to do their best. So I know him. He wouldn't like let one person take the game over. He would try to get everybody to perform to their best.
That's always the hardest, because like I said, I've played that game so many times. So even though I don't play it enough that, you know, some people can say I will win 90% of the time, I don't. That's just clearly not me. But it's hard when you've played it so often and you kind of know the shtick.
Yeah.
And you're just watching and you just like, I want to tell you what to do, but I don't want to be that guy.
Yeah. Well, we had this one, that one kid that we had playing it though. For at first, I thought we were going to just kind of have to push him along for a while, but he really tuned in once the game started picking up and he realized what he could do. I think he was playing the medic. So
I love the medic.
Yeah.
I love the medic because once you start like getting things that, that you have the cure, I often say that the medic becomes Jesus because the medic just walks through and cures everyone.
Oh, yeah. And once you get all your research facilities built and you can jump in between quadrants, it's the medic is really handy.
Yeah, I think the one combination of guys that we've played that has been continually successful is if you've got the dispatcher and the medic.
Yeah.
That will consistently do some damage on a game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I personally love Pandemic. It's a really good game. I'm actually going to need to start picking up some of the newer versions of it, though, and some of the, you know, the Pandemic Cthulhu when it comes out.
You know, in all honesty, I probably won't end up getting it, but at first I found myself just going, man, that is a cheesy tie-in. Why on earth are they doing that? But now that, you know, I think they've shown a bunch of stuff from, like, I don't know if it was at Gamma or just they were talking about it at Gamma, but I've actually seen what the board looks like, and it actually has miniatures, and it looks really interesting.
Yeah.
It looks like it's not just going to be a Pandemic clone, which intrigues me.
Yeah. From what I understand, the gameplay is you're just trying to stop the elders from taking over or something. I haven't really got too much into it. I just love everything Cthulhu. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why it interests me so much. And I think that could tie into the way the game plays, though. You know, having to beat the clock just to keep certain things from happening.
Yeah, I'm always interested. There's one game coming out in the not too distant future, which is like a Cthulhu racing game, and I'm like, ugh. Like, I love a good Cthulhu narrative, and even I'm like, guys, we just need to stop. So I was happy to see that the Pandemic one looks pretty decent.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
We need to start taking up a fund to get you guys Pandemic Legacy because I'm still upset that I don't have anyone who is writing up anything for the site about Pandemic Legacy because I want that to happen. I want it so bad I can taste it, but I can't get my hands on a copy. And so I'm every time somebody tells me they're playing it, I go, "You want to write something about it?" And they're like, "No." I'm like, "Oh."
Well, if any of our listeners want to donate me a copy, I will play and write about it all day long.
No, that it looks fantastic, and the Golden Geek Awards just came out.
Oh yeah, that's all.
And Pandemic Legacy took like all of them.
I think it was the first time we've had a Golden Geek Awards with no Fantasy Flight games on it.
Yeah, there was not a single one. And it probably because all the categories that Fantasy Flight usually takes, Pandemic Legacy took.
Yeah. I was kind of excited, though, about another game that popped up on there because it's one of my favorite, fantasy genres, science fiction / fantasy, and that's Dune the Dice Game.
I didn't even know there was a dice game.
I didn't either. So, and...
Because that one print and play, right?
Yeah, that's the print and play. And once it popped up, I grabbed the PDFs for it and the rules and everything's printed. I've already made my dice. I'm cutting out the board while I work and I'm getting ready to glue it all together. But I had a bunch of the blank Chessex dice. So I just cut the images out and glued them to the Chessex dice so I can, so they'll roll better. But I'm really excited about it. I'm hopefully you get to play it this weekend.
Yeah, because I've always been interested with print and play because I don't get a lot of them just because, you know, unless somebody points them out to you or you do just research what's out there, mm-hmm. you know, you're not always going to be having just a ton of people going, look at this awesome print and play game. Like, that's a niche kind of game market right there, is the print and play kind of stuff. So I'm always curious when the winners get announced, I'm like, I've never heard of this. What is this about? But I still haven't had a chance to sit down and look at those yet.
Yeah. Well, print and play is always just, because me being the cheap person that I am, I get fascinated by things like that. I'm like, well, this might be good because somebody felt that it was so awesome they should give it to me for free. So that's why I usually end up with a lot of print and play stuff. And that when I first ever experienced the Wonders of Cards Against Humanity, it was through the print and play version. And as I said, I'd never play that game again.
Yeah. One thing that's really interesting to me is I'll figure we'll get your input on this. One thing that came out after the Golden Geek Awards came out, there's a couple different places that I saw, like, what's your reaction to the Golden Geek Awards thing? Mm-hmm. And one, I got to give credit to our boy Brent, who you'll see all over the tavern. He posts stuff like a champ. And he's also one of our players in our Victoriana game. Brent just basically said, all right, podcast, here's how it's going to go. It's going to go Secret Cabal, Shut Up and Sit Down, and then Rotto. And I'm like, okay, sure. I didn't even know Rotto had a podcast. Sure, whatever, let's do this. And it came out, and there it was. Secret Cabal, Shut Up and Sit Down, Rotto podcast. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. But the one thing, talking about the fact that Pandemic Legacy won so many, how do you think about this? Because, you know, really, it's a great game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it deserved, I would even go so far as to say it deserved most of the awards it won. However, there's a couple that bothered me.
Okay.
Primarily the fact that it won both Best Thematic Game and Best Strategy Game, which the reason those two categories exist is primarily due to the fact that you want to see different types of games, because otherwise you just do Best Game.
Yeah, and I get what you're saying, because when we think about thematic games, we think about games like the Godfather game that's coming up.
Right.
And if you think about what Pandemic was based off of, it was initially based off that old Flash game where you created a virus to see how quickly you could take the world out. And mm-hmm. So that's where I think it got the thematic game, because it still holds true to the fact that it was based off of this idea. And I could see how they could say it was a thematic game. But and I also see why I could get the strategy game, because there's a lot of strategy that's actually involved in that game.
See, I would be okay. Like, granted, there is part of me that wants to be like, I want strategy game to be like a hardcore, like Euro style, just to get something else out there into the world.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't mind if it won either, because I think you're right. I think you can make the argument for either.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just the fact that it did both. And I don't know. The other one that bothered me was most innovative. It won most innovative game, which it's wonderful. Again,
yeah.
I don't want hate mail. I think this is a fantastic game. It deserved most of the awards it won, but I don't see most innovative because we've already had a legacy game,
yeah,
in Risk Legacy, and we've already had Pandemic. So all this did was add legacy stuff to Pandemic. And for me, the idea of innovative is that this should push something forward.
Yeah.
And as great as an implementation of this is, it just seems like it's just using what already has been. To great effect.
Yeah.
But just using what already has been. And so the broader thing that, you know, we can talk semantics about who won what and everything like that till the cows come home. Because ideally it all comes down to personal taste anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I wanted to bring up was the fact that the Golden Geek it's a popularity contest.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you really look at it, I mean, this isn't, you know, there isn't some, like, conclave out there that's voting on. This is literally all of Board Game Geek. So the fact that Pandemic Legacy went from brand new game to number one, finally unseating Twilight Struggle as the greatest game listed on there, and it did it in a matter of months.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, you could chalk it up to marketing. I mean, you know, it's marketed out there amongst us, you know, not like name brand. You're not going to see it on TV, but see, because I think that, and I'll tell you this, I think that, you know, this could also been like one of those things where, well, my kids are in the game, so maybe they'll like this board game, and this is Legacy, so it must be the first one, you know. And it could have went that way, but
I don't think so. I think that it's gamers that do this.
Yeah.
It's people who are already in the hobby, people who were already excited about this.
But, I mean, you know, it could be where it still has the new on it, you know. It's one of the newer games, and people are still playing it.
I think that definitely has something to do with it, because I think Legacy is still newish. Because Risk, like, I think this is probably to date the best implementation of Legacy, though I am curious to see what Seafall does, because Seafall, it will be the first, as far as I know, the first original IP
mm-hmm.
that uses Legacy. So I'm curious how that works out. But I do think that as of yet, it is the best implementation of Legacy games. So I don't know. I just think it's interesting just to see the sheer force of will.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
And I don't want this to be a bash on Pandemic Legacy. I think it showed up in other things too. Like when it came to best role playing game. Best role playing game went to Blades in the Dark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I first heard about Blades in the Dark from the guys at Fear the Boot. I've looked into it. I think it's a fascinating little system. I love how it handles projects that you're doing in your downtime when your characters aren't, you know, exploring dungeons and whatnot. I think there's a lot of really interesting mechanics in there. But here's the thing. It isn't technically even done yet. If you go on DriveThruRPG right now and get Blades in the Dark, it comes with the idea of, when I get this finished, I will send the rest of it to you.
I hadn't played it yet or looked at it.
But you're basically getting an early access role playing game. And again, I think this is a good game. I just wish that it had waited until it was a full release. Because right now, I almost think it's weird. And I'll totally cop to the fact that part of me saying this is that I am a Cypher System fanboy, and the fact that Cypher System lost to a game that hasn't come out yet.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, though, I mean, if you're getting bits and pieces, it kind of reminds me when the D&D Next stuff was coming out for when you signed up to playtest the 5th edition of Dungeons & Dragons.
Right.
You know, and then after the playtest stuff came out, they started releasing the free stuff, and you know it gave everybody a taste, and they were still able to tweak the rules before it went to print. And you know that could be what's going on.
That's exactly right. The people who are putting out Blades in the Dark, I will not even begin to fault them for that. I think that's a fantastic way to do it, because you can tweak and playtest, because literally the guys getting your game are playtesting it with you. I think it's a fantastic process.
Yeah.
The problem is that they won for best role-playing game. And they're not done yet.
Can you play it, though, right now?
No, it is playable.
And then it's still a role-playing game.
I don't understand. And it just reminds me, I think part of it is the fact that Blades in the Dark was a Kickstarter thing.
Yeah.
And if I tag Blades in the Dark in our tags for this episode, I know I'm going to get railed on, because if there's one thing I've discovered, it's when you get involved with a Kickstarter, the people that get wrapped up in a Kickstarter, because of the fact that they got in on the ground floor and because of the fact that they probably put in a good chunk of money to get in on the ground floor, the suckers get real passionate.
Oh yeah.
Because they want to make sure that everyone knows that this is the best thing ever, because otherwise, why did I put my money towards it?
Right. I think Kickstarter also lends to the fact that you kind of feel like you own a piece of the company, because you're helping the company get a footing.
There's like a feeling of ownership, because without you being part of that Kickstarter, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah. And then also with the way this game system, not the game system, but the way they're finishing this game out, is it's almost like as a player, through your input, you're going to have a, input on how the game is played in the future, and storylines possibly in it as well. You know, because, you know, they watch those forums and they watch the Reddit posts whenever people talk about this stuff.
Oh, the guys behind Blades in the Dark are, I don't want to say infamous because it's not a bad thing, but they are on point when it comes to listening to people playing their games. So they are especially good at doing that.
It kind of reminds me of Star Wars The Old Republic, the role-playing game. The MMORPG, the reason being is that before Disney bought LucasArts, when you played that game, they officially said your character becomes canon in the Star Wars universe. Because it happens 3,000 years before, Empire and all that. You're not affecting anything in the future, but yet, your storyline is part of that universe now. And that just blew people's minds. They're like, well, I could create a character. And that's why there's such a huge following for that game. So that could be another reason why there's such a huge following for this, and how it got, best role-playing game of the year.
Yeah, I find the whole thing fascinating. I know I'm curious as we start going into convention season, there's going to be a whole bunch of more awards. This is just the first wave, because I know that I'm one of the people who participates in the voting. I can't remember. There's like hundreds of us at this point who are involved in voting for the Dice Tower Awards. And I will gladly tell you what I voted for after it's all said and done, but don't expect me to give any kind of kind of thing on that beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
But that one is really interesting. It's really fun to see the discussion that goes into the nominees and who gets what as far as that, because man, there, you want to talk about some stuff. Not only are you getting gamers talking about the games, you're getting gamers who are somehow tied to what would be considered gaming media. So podcasters, YouTubers, bloggers. So you got people who are already on that next level, just really getting incredibly nerdy about this stuff. It is that I understand why it's a closed group, because if it wasn't, it would be a nightmare. But I almost wish that you guys could see this discussion, because it gets intense, man. It's crazy. But it just also reminds me of just how passionate we get about this stuff. Like, this is bread and butter stuff we're talking about here. So really, when it comes down to it, the Golden Geek Awards is just a bunch of silliness. It really is. But at the same point, it's people getting really psyched about a game they love.
Oh yeah. And that's the one thing I've always noticed, that never get in an argument about something a nerd loves.
Oh, it's dangerous, man. Yeah. It is absolutely dangerous. The way I described it is that everyone has a button that can be pushed. And if you push that button, you must be prepared to deal with the just rush of discussion that will be coming at you.
I've been on those discussions myself. Growing up, I had friends that were Trekkies versus and friends that were, in the Star Wars, and you know, when I would say something, and I would just say one thing to sit back and watch it all, and I'd be like, wow, the Death Star could kill, take out the Enterprise. And then you just sit back and just watch it flow. I mean,
just watch people's heads explode.
I know. It's always the best thing to do. But, I mean, the same things happen with this. I mean, because, you know, like, I talk about how, like, I play Savage Worlds, and I love Savage Worlds, and I tell people about it all the time. But I still play other role-playing games. I'll still play D&D. I'll still play all this other stuff. But there's some people that are just diehard about their games. Like, and I'll use an example. I don't know, Jolly Blackburn. Mm-hmm. Did an episode of Knights of the Dinner Table where he called Pathfinder Pathgrinder.
Yep.
And he got a hateful email that somebody was going to unsubscribe to his cartoon, a comic strip that's free on the internet. Somebody's going to unsubscribe from it because he made fun of Pathfinder.
Which, I mean, yeah. People get super excited about their stuff. And
oh, yeah.
The problem isn't that they get super excited about their stuff. The problem is when they feel that anybody who likes other stuff
is wrong.
Yeah. That's when it becomes the problem.
I do kind of get that way a little bit with Fantasy Grounds, though, but I'll keep that to a minimum.
I am aware. For those of you who don't know, Daniel and I first got connected through the folks at Game Church. And so we're both on part of their Facebook group over at Game Church City. And somebody just comes out of the woodwork and says, hey, I really want to play like a role-playing game online. How can I do that? And here comes Daniel, practically earning a Fantasy Grounds commission. And if you've listened to this podcast, if you're part of our social media stuff, you know that I'm just about getting stuff into people's hands. Lately I've been getting in trouble because people have been saying that I'm like the gaming equivalent of a crack dealer. I just put the deals out and then make people spend money because I just want people to know that these things are out there. So as Daniel's talking about Fantasy Grounds, which how much does it cost to get Fantasy Grounds?
Okay. Fantasy Grounds technically is free.
Technically.
If you have a DM that loves you enough, or a GM that loves you enough to buy the ultimate version for himself. And that means anybody can connect to his software while he runs a game and play for free. Now, if your GM doesn't want to do that, then you have to pay $40. But if you want to GM and you love someone enough to do that, you can buy the game for $150, and you can have as many people in your game as you want that your little internet connection can handle.
Okay, yes, this is true. So Daniel is giving that entire speech, and I'm just sitting here going, Roll20 is pretty nice. We use it all the time. It's free.
But I can also still make the argument that you don't get all the bells and whistles unless you pay a $10 subscription to Roll20 a month. And when you buy your Fantasy Grounds, it's yours forever. Even if they come out with a tablet edition, you're going to get it on your tablet.
And you do realize I'm just sitting here laughing at you.
Oh, I know. And I'm enjoying every bit of it because, you know, I can hear the money being deposited into my account now.
Oh, my goodness. I swear, if the folks behind Fantasy Grounds actually were paying you, you'd be loaded.
I love it, though. I love their system. They have their own convention, though. I will tell you this. This is probably the coolest thing I've ever seen. So every few months, they have what's called the FG Con. And so what that is just the guys on their forums decide to host a weekend's worth of role-playing in one-shots. And for 48 hours, they're running nonstop games. So you can, like, in the morning, wake up and play a one-shot of Dungeons & Dragons, and then the afternoon, finish it off in GURPS, switch over to Savage Worlds by dinner time, you know. It's pretty intense.
All right, well, I do kind of want to transition here.
Sorry.
Before we become the Fantasy Grounds Hour. We started talking about some of the stuff that's coming out. We did mention some things that got mentioned at Gamma. And I do want to talk about Gamma a little bit. Now, there is a bazillion things that we can talk about here. I mean, if nothing else, what you need to do is check out the Dice Tower. They did live streams throughout the event, and which are intense, like hours upon hours of interviews and seeing the different prototypes that are out there. However, we're not going to do all that because neither one of us was out there. All we're doing is seeing what the press releases and the streams and stuff that are coming out of there. But Daniel, what are some of the things that you saw that were coming out of Gamma that got you really excited?
Oh my goodness.
I have a funny feeling we're going to have some overlap here, but
yeah, it's intense. Okay. So like, I have a list and I'll go through it real quick. First one, it's from Medieval Lords. It's Little Monsters. Pretty much, it's a card game where you're these little monsters and you're collecting your cards. And as you go through, you wonder if you're going to draw the next card. And you know, if you draw the next card and it's a parent monster card, you lose all your cards. So, and it's really appeals to me because my son and me enjoy, you know, I've talked about this before, Pig. You know, it's the single die game, Pig. And I think he would really like this. And it just seems like a really simple and quick game to play. So, and it seems pretty cool. I'm excited about Godfather game. I'm not going to go too much into it. A New Dawn.
Okay, I was about to say, I do have to ask, though, because not only has one Godfather game been announced, but three Godfather games have been announced.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you that it's going to have a 30-sided die in it, so I'm kind of excited about that.
the sheer presence of an odd-sided die.
Yeah, I mean, I've got them here, but, I mean, nobody has utilized that die in so long. But I am excited about the game. I know I'll enjoy playing it with Slimp. Now, the next game that I want to talk about is Wasteland Express.
Now, I've only seen some artwork for it, and the artwork does look gorgeous, but I have no idea what this game plays like.
Me either. It's like, it reminds me of Fallout New Vegas, which I'm a big Fallout fan, but just the key is you're just a delivery person in the post-apocalypse. I mean, what's not to love about it?
Yeah, see, I want to like it, but I know me. And I know that every time I've picked up what is referred to as a pick-up-and-deliver game, which everything about this seems like it's just going to be a pick-up-and-deliver game. Like, literally, you are a delivery person.
Yeah.
I don't know. For some reason, they seem to fall flat with me. Like, even when they came out with the Firefly game, I'm like, oh, it's Firefly. Awesome. And then I played it, and I'm like, wow, this is a drag.
See, that's why I don't like branded games. I think that's one of the main reasons why I really don't like them is that because you get all excited about it and then you're like, eh, I can't play like Doctor Who RPGs or nothing like that.
Well, I was just talking on Twitter earlier today about the Doctor RPGs. The only problem I have with them is that I wish that I could be like a member of UNIT.
Yeah.
Or somebody besides the Doctor because, I mean, you're the Doctor.
Yeah.
You're going to figure it out.
Yeah, of course. Well, you've seen the Doctor Who miniatures game, ain't you?
Yes. Well, I've seen of it. Like, I haven't actually played it.
We had a demo at our comic shop here locally last summer, and it was when everything was still free on the internet before they decided to go ahead and get licensed and published. Yeah, I was able to get the books and stuff then, and you can pick up the miniatures. It seems okay, but, I mean, you're pretty much just the Doctor controlling the unit.
Right.
And fighting off other stuff. So, the miniatures are cool, but I can't get into that concept because the Doctor always wins.
Right.
So how's that going to be fun?
So, I know for me, I have a couple things that came out of Gamma that just are... blowing my mind.
Oh yeah.
And I will say that as we were talking about licensing games, I think every one of these is a license.
Yeah.
I, too, was really excited about the Godfather games because I have a long-standing love affair with the Godfather. And at first, like last year at Gamma, they're like, oh, we're going to come up with a Godfather game. And it was a different company. And that company broke my heart. I know it was you. Like I feel like I should take this company out on a fishing boat because they broke my heart.
To submit suits.
It basically came out and it's just Mafia, but with a Godfather veneer.
Yeah.
But these games, I've done my research now before I go getting excited again, you know, to bring in another Godfather reference. Every time I try to get out, they keep pulling me back in. These games actually look amazing. And the one of them that's coming out from the guys at Cool Mini or Not is actually designed by Eric Lang, who is quickly becoming one of my favorite designers. And if you don't know who Eric Lang is, go on Board Game Geek and look him up. You will also notice that he has probably designed some of your favorite games too. So the fact that Eric Lang is doing what is essentially going to be part like worker placement, as you are literally trying to own most of the city, to literally establish your empire. This I can get behind. So I'm excited about that one. A New Dawn does look like a good version as well. I believe that one's IDW.
Yeah, it's IDW.
So that one also looks good, but I think the Cool Mini or Not one is really scratching my itch. I am also excited. Speaking of Eric Lang, here's another one. He is taking the Bloodborne video game and turning it into a cooperative card game.
I've already been advised that I have to play the game by Slimp. He is acknowledged that he is going to get it the day it comes out.
It looks really interesting because if you've never played the video game, if you've never heard of the video game, the basic concept, without going into all the story stuff, the basic concept is that this is hard and it will destroy you. But in all likelihood, you will die multiple times and bad things will happen every time because you're basically walking into a city filled with these utter monsters and you're there to investigate like how it all went down.
Yeah.
So the way the card game apparently works is that you're fighting a monster and you get to stay in and fight as long as you can. But if you die, if you don't get out in time and you die, then you just lose all your progress. You'll come back. You're not out of the game, but you've lost all the progress. So it's kind of like a push your luck kind of thing. Mm-hmm. As you're trying to manage your inventory and how much damage you've taken. It really sounds interesting and I really kind of want it. Likewise, there's a Dresden Files cooperative card game coming out.
Yeah, I saw that. I didn't want to say anything though.
It's the Dresden Files.
I know.
I've only just recently jumped on the Jim Butcher bandwagon. Not because I didn't want to. It's just I hadn't ever picked up one of his books. So now that I have, and I have read about, you know, Harry Dresden and company, I want this game. I want to see it. I want to play it. An IP is not enough to sell me on a game in and of itself. So I want to play. It's not like I'm going to be like signed up day one. Give me this game. But I am definitely curious about it. There is, however, one game here that I mentioned. It technically got announced before Gamma, but it only got announced in like vague rumors and like the designers put pictures of it up on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So I don't really count that. I will count it as it was announced at Gamma. And that's the Attack on Titan game.
Are you talking about the card game or...
No, I'm talking about the one that literally has like a foot tall titan that stands up on your table.
Yeah, I saw that. It looks awesome, but I also want to play the deck building game.
I love a good deck builder. Isn't that like a Weiss Schwartz spin-off game, I think?
I'm not sure.
I think it fits into another, like a set kind of thing. But as much as that sounds interesting, like I love a good deck builder. I love a good card game. But there's something just, especially now with the Ministry, I'm looking for games that have great table presence. And there is just something about, I mean, the thing literally looks like it's almost a foot tall on your table.
Yeah. I mean, that is impressive. I love miniatures as well. So.
Yeah. And you literally put your guys on various stages to move up to the creature's neck. If you've no idea what I'm talking about with Attack on Titan, it's a piece of anime, and season one is out on Netflix. It is brutal. Do not let your kids watch this. But if you are a person who is really interested in kind of a weird fantasy-esque setting of an anime, the whole concept is that there are these titans, these giant people that are just roaming around, and there's like only a couple cities left. And it's behind this giant wall, but eventually the wall comes down. And so, oh my goodness, it's so good. I don't want to tell you anymore because there's so many cool moments, even in the first season.
It became one of my favorite animes when I first saw it. So
it really is just really interesting, and it's really well designed, and the characters are fascinating. You will learn the beauty of the potato. There's so much good in that show, and the fact that they're going to give me a board where it's a one versus many game, so one person plays the Titan and everyone else plays the hunters that are going after it. Oh my goodness. It's so good.
Now, there was a game that they announced that isn't really a new game. I wanted to bring it up real quick. It's a re-release. Do you ever play Ogre?
I have played Ogre. This is the not going to destroy your back carrying it around copy of Ogre.
No, it's just like, well, you can. I think they're going to do paper miniatures on this one. Mm-hmm. But you can still use the you can still actually have miniatures as well. And the cool thing about Ogre was you were able just to build your own miniatures to begin with. It wasn't anything that had to fall into specs to play tournaments or anything like Warhammer. So, it's just going to be really interesting because they're just revamping everything and releasing some more graphics and stuff.
Yeah, there is one thing which was kind of like, as far as I'm concerned, it is the bomb that dropped on Gamma. They announced a Munchkin CCG.
Oh my goodness.
That is a collectible card game of Munchkin. Now, I will stand firm in my I don't play Munchkin unless somebody really wants me to. And I really do not have a place in my wallet for a CCG in my life.
Yeah, not but since Magic.
But I am really curious as to how a Munchkin CCG would play.
Well, is it going to be compatible with all the other cards that they ever put out?
No, it is. It is not. It is its own thing.
So, I mean, Steve Jackson has done CCGs before, and you know, if it's anything like the Illuminati rules, I mean, it'll take a while to play. But I mean, it could be interesting, but pricey.
Yeah, I'm super curious about that one. But yeah, Gamma is full of these cool games that are coming out, and I don't know how much of it's going to be available readily. I don't know. Cause Gamma is basically publishers come out and say, hey, game stores, here's what we have. What do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's always interesting cause I know for a fact that some of the games that were announced at Gamma are still prototypes. Like they're not even fully put together yet. They're legit prototypes. In fact, I just watched for the Bloodborne game. I watched Eric Lang do an interview, and he was still using images he ripped off of Google.
Yeah.
For the cards. Like, they're still very much prototypes.
Oh yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what kind of comes from this.
I hope we get to see some of it. Well, at Gen Con this year. So,
it's quite possible that I know for a fact that the interview that I saw about Attack on Titan said that it might be close, but it's shooting for a Gen Con release.
hope we get to, get to play it at least there. That'd be kind of cool. Kind of like Ghostbusters did.
Yeah, the Cryptozoic also announced Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah. I was like, but Ghostbusters 1 just came out. Now we got to get another one.
That's what they do, man. It's what they do.
Oh, hopefully that game will be entering into the library of games that we play on our game days. I have a friend that has it that's going to be bringing it and teaching people how to play.
Yeah, there are certain games that I really want to see at kind of come into the library, if for no other reason than just because I know that if I put that down on a table, people will want to come around and play it just by the sheer presence of it.
Yeah.
Like, the one that's on my wish list so hard right now is Flick 'em Up. Because I've never seen that game demoed at a convention that it didn't have a crowd of like 15 people around it.
Yeah, that's a good... I saw that at Gen Con last year, and it was pretty intense. I mean, just sitting there watching people play it.
You're watching people flick little wooden bullets at each other.
Yeah. I think a game that I kind of want, but it was really pricey for the Kickstarter, was that the Walking Dead miniatures game. I mean, it was beautifully done, but it was $300.
Yep. That's the problem.
Yeah. I tried to get Mom to buy it for me. It's like, hey, Christmas is coming up soon.
There you go.
She was like, no.
Well, all right. Daniel, it's looking like we're coming to a close here. This episode, every once in a while, you'll see us have an episode where we don't really get into a deep faith topic, just because, you know, there really isn't... We could probably try to force one in here, but we're really just doing a reacting to the news kind of episode with, you know, the Golden Geek Awards and Gamma. We could probably shove some kind of silly faith topic in here, but it would really be just shoving it in there for the sake of it. And I'll say, you know, a couple episodes ago when we just said, you can't slap Jesus on it and have it work. Like, that's literally the title I used. But Daniel, what are some things that you're psyched about coming up?
Well, I've already got my second game day planned, and that is on the 2nd of April. And anybody in my area or close to my area want to come down, just contact me, and I'll set you up, and you can come and play. And if you want to, bring a game and teach us to play, we're willing to do that too. But that's just one of the things I'm psyched about coming up for that. But, you know, as far as games, though, I think out of all of them, probably the Pandemic Cthulhu game. I'm kind of stoked about that one.
Nice. Well, I know I'm all in for getting Tavern Con up and running. I have a couple other smaller events coming up before that. But making Tavern Con happen is kind of my bread and butter these days. I am super excited. Things are getting, as we're getting closer, I have officially put out at least the first page on our website about just the details about the event and what's going to happen. If you came last year, we are literally only about 10 minutes drive difference than where we were last year. We have a lot more space. We're going to have really cool guests. Jack Birkenstock and the folks from the Bodana Group are going to be there. We've already got a pile of really cool games that you can win, thanks to a huge collection of companies that have kind of backed us and gotten behind what we're doing. And I listed all of those on that page. If you want to donate games, last year we had a huge amount of the games come from people in the regulars community who just said, look, I want to support you guys. Here's a bunch of games that I'm going to order, and you guys can just use these for giveaways. If y'all want to do that, we would absolutely love it. You can get in touch with me, Mike, at inroadsministries.com. And if you want to be in the area, I know we've got people that are already making their travel plans to come from pretty much all over the place. We'd love to have you at the event. If not, there's lots of ways that you can help support Inroads. Obviously, we always are looking for donations as we're getting ready for this fundraiser. Every donation goes to helping us do things like create materials, to traveling to conventions. Part of the reason why we're not going to conventions this year is because of cost. Just a lot of the traveling that we do to churches, you know, we deal with driving, and if you've ever had to fill up your gas tank recently, you know that gas prices are never good. So your donations help us literally do what we do. You can also do just, you know, maybe you're like me and I just declared a absolutely no spending freeze on my account recently. And if you're, maybe you're in that boat as well, I will tell you that one of the easiest ways you can help us out is to go on iTunes, find the Game Store Profits podcast listing, and give us a rating and a review. We are a niche podcast within a niche podcast. We not only are we talking about gaming, we're not only are we talking about faith, we're talking about faith and gaming. And it becomes very difficult for people to find us, whether we put ourselves in the gaming category or the faith category. So the way that people are going to find us is if you guys share posts and if you comment on iTunes, it really, really makes a huge impact on where we fall in the various algorithms that set that thing up. If you just leave us a rating, the more ratings, the more likely people are to find us. We are very excited about what's happening. There's a lot of work going on. I had to have a moment yesterday when my wife's like, "When did you eventually come to bed?" I go, "You don't want to know." Because I spend a lot of late nights working on this stuff. And, yeah, we absolutely love doing it. I'm super excited about what this ministry is. We just got in touch with a guy that has a church out in Kentucky who's doing amazing stuff. We're going to have him on the podcast before too much longer. We've got a gentleman out in Berlin who is going to be, his schedule is working itself out, and he's going to send us the responses to a bunch of questions we just sent him. There's a lot of really cool stuff happening, and we're so glad that you guys come along for the ride. All right, Daniel, I think that covers all of my business. How about, do you want to send us out?
Well, I guess I can. I've never done it before.
There's a first time for everything, and Romo is off, you know, doing his thing. So because I opened it, we'll have you close it, and it'll be a proud moment. It'll be like nudging you out of the nest.
Well, just remember, there's always a game, and there's always a group, and you know, no matter where the dice falls, just let it play, guys. That's it.